I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining me now in the studio is award-winning writer Amy Wallance, who's the author of The Rainy Season, Haiti Since Duvalier, and The Rainy Season, Haiti Then and Now. She's a longtime contributing editor at The Nation and teaches in the Literary Journalism Program at the University of California in Irvine. Her latest book is Farewell Fred Voodoo, A Letter from Haiti. She has and also has an article in the Los Angeles Times. For journalists today, the whole world is watching. And Amy Wallance will be speaking at the Downtown Public Library this coming Tuesday, January the 15th at 7:15, in conversation with KPFK's John Wiener. Welcome to Background Briefing, Amy Wallance.
Thank you, Ian.
And let's begin with your opinion piece in Sunday's LA Times about you being the skunk at the picnic, right?
Yeah. Sort of.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, it used to be said that the role of journalism was to afflict the comfortable and to comfort the afflicted. And
right.
I think,
speak truth to power.
I think to some extent we've maybe lost our way. So what is it when, you know, describe the scene at the garment factory in Haiti and how you were the skunk at the picnic by being a journalist.
Well, first of all, I had written a blog that attacked this garment factory. And what bloggers can do now is, you know, figure out what's going on, use their contacts to learn what's going on, and then write about it without ever going there. So I had written about this garment factory without ever going there, but I had my very strongly held opinions about the garment industry in the Third World, as it used to be known, and especially in my little corner of the Third World, Haiti. So I wrote a rather intemperate piece calling it the new plantation or something like that. And all the people involved in getting this garment factory into Haiti finally read my blog and had a breakdown and started yelling at me. And one email from one of the people who had been there started, "I am so disappointed." But what happened was then I got an invitation to go see the factory. And I still have the same opinion of it, but it's a very nice sweatshop. There's no sweat involved.
I see.
There's a cooling system, for example.
Right.
It's like a model garment factory.
But the people who are mad at you are not just regular folks.
No.
Bill and Hillary Clinton, Sean Penn, Ben Stiller, and the president of Haiti, Michel Martelly.
Michel Martelly, yes, true. They're all mad at me, but the person who was maddest at me was the person in the State Department who helped get this factory into Haiti. So, and he's the one who actually then invited me to go to the factory, which is good. Like in Haiti in the old days, if you wrote something mean and anyone ever found out about it, which was rare that anyone noticed what you'd written about Haiti in the old days, you didn't get an invitation then to see what you had maligned. You got threats and death threats. So I guess it's a little better in this world.
So you mentioned in your new book, Farewell Fred Voodoo, A Letter from Haiti, Amy Wallance, that you're in love with this maddening place. And I've often wondered what it is that attracts people like yourself, like Bill Clinton,
right,
like Sean Penn, people who really know the country but feel some special need to do what they can at the same time sort of recognizing a certain futility. So I'm trying to figure that out.
Well, it's a combination of a lot of things. You know, for me, and I look at this very issue in the book. The book is largely about what outsiders do in Haiti, why they come to Haiti, what they feel about Haiti, why there are recidivists like me or Sean Penn or Bill Clinton is probably the grandest of the recidivists in Haiti, the outsiders who keep coming down. And I think, of course, part of it, I won't speak for myself on this because I was simply seduced by the country, but for a lot of people, they want to do good. And where better to do good than in a place that is so obviously desperate for something good to happen? So that's the initial impulse for Sean Penn, certainly, probably for Bill Clinton. But then when you're there, One, the country is so seductive, so that led me to stay. And also, for people like Clinton or Penn, it's very welcoming. I mean, and you can have a fantastic time, and not in a bad way. It's not bad to say this, but, you know, you're you become a very important person in this world very quickly. For me, it took me 15 years to have anyone ever recognize me, even though I was, like, for a long time, one of the few white people there. But for Sean Penn and Bill Clinton, you know, it's mass adulation as well as the feeling that you're doing good.
Again, I'm joined in the studio by award-winning writer Amy Wilentz, author of The Rainy Season, Haiti Since Duvalier, and The Rainy Season, Haiti Then and Now. She's a longtime contributing editor at The Nation and teaches in the Literary Journalism Program at the University of California in Irvine. And her latest book is Farewell, Fred Voodoo, A Letter from Haiti. She also has an article at the Los Angeles Times for Journalists Today, The Whole World is Watching. And, of course, we're speaking on the third anniversary of the earthquake in Haiti that took 300,000 lives and left over a million homeless. You mentioned that there's something seductive about the place. Let's start with that, but then also trying to address, you know, what has or hasn't happened since this tragedy 3 years ago.
Well, what's seductive about the place is the culture. So culture is created by people, so the people also. But the culture in Haiti is very vivid. Because it's so poor, the culture is outwardly visible. And then the artworks by Haitians, even the worst of the tourist art that you can see sitting waiting in a dusty condition by the roadside, real paintings, even the worst of them is kind of sweet and darling. But the great ones, these are real master painters. And so there's that. There's the traditional religion, Vodou, which I write about in the book and which my main character is based on. Even though this is a work of nonfiction, there is this character, Fred Voodoo, who haunts the book. And that's an incredible belief system, a fabulous, rich tradition, which you can see both in its fancy tourist forms and in its lesser forms. But let's talk about the earthquake a little bit, because the earthquake, in a way, is the greatest tourist event that ever happened in Haiti. So Haiti has a lot of beautiful historical things to see. There's the citadel built by former slaves in the early 1800s. It's a giant fortress on a mountaintop in the north of Haiti. And there are other things like that to be seen, historic things that were not touched by the earthquake. But people have come to see that from the outside, but the numbers, the droves of people who came down after the earthquake to help, it was gigantic influx. All those dusty paintings that used to sit there got bought up right away by all the aid workers in the initial relief surge, and then continuing the reconstruction surge. But what happened in Haiti, and I think it happens in the rest of the world, is that when countries from the outside give a huge amount of money to countries that who are suffering from a disaster, it's very hard to get that money to the hands of the people who are suffering. What often happens is it goes to contractors from the outside. It goes to half of the initial relief money the United States gave went to the Defense Department of the United States to keep the peace in Haiti, which was, to my mind, largely unnecessary, not entirely unnecessary. So a lot of money gets lost going back into the very institutions that have fundraised it. A lot of money goes to vehicles, to staff, to housing for the relief people. And it's hard to get the money into the hands of Haitians, say, in this case. And very much of the money that was earmarked for Haiti is still sitting in bank accounts. It gets shifted between bank accounts as projects fail. A lot of it has just simply not been dispersed. Some millions, like 400 million, I can't remember the exact figure, is still sitting with the International Red Cross. It was so easy to raise money in the wake of the earthquake initially, but so hard to get the money out there. I don't entirely blame the aid organizations, but really, I think they could have done a better job.
So how many people are homeless then today?
Today, it is 358,000 plus. still living in camps.
So two-thirds have found homes.
Two-thirds have gotten out, have found homes, have been relocated with the help of international organizations. There was something called 616. They wanted to get a 16th of the population out into six neighborhoods or something, or a sixth, I can't remember. But they did give $500 per family to a bunch of people in camps to get those people out of those particular camps, the most visible and the largest camps. But what that meant is the people in the smaller camps, there are about 490 little camps housing those 358,000 people. Those people are now waiting for their $500, wouldn't you? That's a lot of money in Haiti, where the average family lives on $350 a year.
So is there there's been a lot of talk about some of the sort of deeper systemic problems. Let's start with the fact that everybody cooks with charcoal, which means that the deforestation happens and continues to happen, and there's very little left in terms of the native forests. And of course, when it rains, which it does often, and there are hurricanes, the topsoil is washed away. People are flooded, etc. So you would think that at some point or other there'd be some discussion about maybe there's got to be another way to cook food.
Well, Haitians aren't backward because they're insistently, stubbornly backward. A lot of the problem with charcoal and deforestation has been caused by the fact that the rice industry, not industry, but rice cultivation was so undermined by the dumping of U.S. Taxpayer-subsidized surplus rice into the Haitian market by U.S. policy in the 1980s and 1990s. What happened was this rice came to market in Haiti and undersold Haitian cultivated rice. Therefore, rice farmers had to turn into the cash economy. And one way to get quickly into the cash economy is to cut down all the trees around your house and turn them into charcoal. So you don't have that big an investment in making that charcoal, and you can get some money for your family fairly rapidly. So that fed into the charcoal. Once there's charcoal available for you to buy at market and it's pretty cheap, then you're going to cook with charcoal. So the destruction of Haitian agriculture led to a lot more deforestation happening, and people will cook with charcoal if there's not a cheaper alternative. It's efficient, it works, and it gets their food cooked. There are a lot of projects in Haiti to use solar cookers and natural gas cookers, but as far as I've seen, and this is all anecdotal, not scientific evidence, those aren't really working. There must be some problem, some flaw in the design of the programs. Haitians aren't seeing the benefit of using a solar energy source. One problem in Haiti today, or one paradigm that I'm really interested in is, and this happens in the U.S. too, in different communities. Most people I know, if they're going to use solar power, they buy their solar panels, they put them in, and then their solar energy is free. Indeed, sometimes they have so much of it, they sell it back to the power company. In Haiti, the opposite is going to happen. There are many plans to install solar energy among the lower middle classes, people who can probably pay something per month. So a company will come in and install the solar power, and then that company will charge you to use the sun as your power source per month. It totally confounds my understanding of solar power.
Well, didn't you come up with the phrase, the morally repugnant elite?
I wish I had come up with the phrase. I think it's a phrase that was invented by outsiders in Africa or something. Morally repugnant elite, which happens to be the same initials, MRE, as meals ready to eat that are distributed in relief situations.
Still there, right?
Yeah, they're still there, very much still there. In fact, a member of the morally repugnant elite was recently, in an incredible turnabout, arrested in Haiti for kidnapping other members of the morally repugnant elite. A fabulous story. Go online and find it.
Mm-hmm. So given that you have all of these powerful and prominent Americans like former President Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter was down there hammering away, building houses, right? Yeah. So, excuse me, I'm still getting over a cold here.
So is everyone.
I know. Well, this is 2 4-year-old twin boys visiting over the holidays. No, it was a lot of fun, but I'm still have the legacy. So tell me, though, with all of that compassion, with people like Bill Clinton and Sean Penn, who I understand are doing, you know, it really is
he's an amazing phenomenon.
Yeah. You know, with all this Yankee know-how, how come is it going to make a difference, systemically, or is it just continually? I mean, I hate to sound like this, but that's the question, and we've only got a couple of minutes left here. So
sometimes I think that all the earthquake reconstruction that hasn't worked is kind of a Haitian resistance, that they're resisting being occupied again by the United States. They were occupied from 1915 to 1934, and a lot got done by the United States, but it was done with like virtual slave Haitian labor, et cetera. So sometimes I think that it's actually an active resistance. But, you know, so much of it is misguided and so much of it is underfunded, even though there's so much money waiting to be used. So we have to wait and see. Also, it's only 3 years after a massive disaster.
Well, Amy Willens, I'm sorry we've run out of time, and I thank you so much for joining us here in the studio. Again, I've been speaking with Amy Willens, who's the author of The Rainy Season, Haiti Since Duvalier, and The Rainy Season, Haiti Then and Now. She's a longtime contributing editor at The Nation and teaches in the Literary Journalism Program at the University of California in Irvine. Her latest book is Farewell, Fred Voodoo, A Letter from Haiti. She has an article in Los Angeles Times for Journalists Today, The Whole World is Watching. And Amy Willens will be speaking at the Downtown Public Library this coming Tuesday, January the 15th at 7:15 p.m. in conversation with KPFK's John Wiener. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me. And I'll be back again on Monday at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. The other became